Welcome to the podcast for the book, Deliberate Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Ken Wynemco, written by author Bob Hennigy, published and printed by ZG Serve, LLC, copyright Deliberate Injustice, LLC. This podcast was produced by Connie Nesberry International, LLC. For more information, visit www.deliberateinjusticethebook.com. This podcast is The Prison Experience, featuring Ken Wynemco, exoneree. Ken, I read in the book that when you were sentenced, they changed your sentencing date, but they did not notify your family. What happened there?
Yeah, and that I was scheduled to be sentenced on December the 16th, and my family was going to be there that day, my family and friends, because they wanted to raise some objections, you know, about what happened to me. As it turned out, they took me into court the day before, on December 15th. Nobody else in the courtroom. And I told the judge, I said, and this is all matter of the record, too. I said, you know, Your Honor, I'm scheduled to be sentenced tomorrow. He said, no, we're getting this out of the way right now. Just like get you in and out as soon as they can and as quietly as I can. That's what they did.
And then you couldn't have your supports there?
No.
Are these anniversary dates of what happened to you? Do they still bother you?
Yes, they do. Yes, I'm sorry to say that they do. I'm a strong-willed person, Connie. Anyone that's known me for a long time, like Bob, you know, Bob Hennigy, my dear friend Bob Hennigy, I've known since our freshman year in high school in 1965. They know I'm a strong-willed person. But even there are times like right now, where you know I'm talking to you about what happened to me, or you know I get flashbacks of what I've seen in prison. There are times to this day. If I'm researching a case, or if I see a case on TV that'll remind me something that I've seen, I won't be able to sleep for a night or two. And that goes back to all the exonerees suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, just like many of our veterans do. You know, and I want all you listeners to understand what I'm going to say, understand this point. There's no doubt that many of our, I'm proud of all our veterans, number one, but there's no doubt, especially if someone's in combat, they come back home, they've seen some ugly stuff. People getting killed or maimed, whatever, okay? So I can understand how they would suffer from PTSD. It's the same situation with exonerees. Believe me, it is. I can't tell you how many people I've seen get stabbed to death in prison, get raped, get beat nearly to death. I still have nightmares about that. But here's one point I want to make very, very clear. Our military veterans signed up. They volunteered to go into service because that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to serve their country. I didn't wake up, or none of my fellow exonerees around the country, we didn't wake up one morning and say, you know what, I'm going to go down to the police station or the courthouse and you know, say, can I go to prison for 40 years? So you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you didn't sign up for this.
So we're forced into having PTSD as far as I'm concerned. And I think most of the listeners, at least I hope most of the listeners would agree with that, with my thoughts.
Describe prison, because you're talking about there's a library there, but then you're witnessing all these horrible things. I always thought people stayed in their own cells.
First of all, let me start by saying this, Connie. Prison is a dark world. It's a whole different world than you or most of our listeners have ever seen. And I pray to God that you never have to go through and see, you know, go through that process to see what it's like. But it's a dark world. Prison is a very scary place where the public can't see what's going on. And as far as you mentioned the point about, you know, whether there are libraries there, there are libraries. That's a federal law. You have to have law libraries. That's a federal law, which is a good thing that law exists, because I learned so much about the criminal justice system myself. I know the criminal law very well now because I studied it every day for almost 10 years, you know, when I was in prison, better than some of the court-appointed attorneys that are trying to defend, you know, clients right now. There's no doubt about that. I've been told that many times. And another thing about prison, people have this concept of, well, geez, it can't be that bad in prison. Gee, they got TVs. They can work out. They can play baseball. They can play softball. All at the taxpayer's expense. That's a fallacy. That is fake news, to use more recent term.
Describe, how is it? What is a day
there
like
are, there? There are TVs.
I think people don't understand, and we need to understand.
Okay. Every person, every inmate, if you have the money, you're allowed to buy a 13-inch black and white TV. You pay for that out of your own money. If people have jobs, they can take out, you know, earn enough money, if you want to consider 17 cents an hour, you know, or $1.77 a day, a lot of money, but you can purchase yourself. Taxpayers don't pay for anything. There is recreation equipment like weights, softball bats, softballs, gloves, okay, that are in prison so the people, you know, the inmates can play sports. But that comes out of an account that's called the Inmate Benefit Fund. And what that deals with, there are stores. Every prisoner is allowed to go to a store every 2 weeks. You can spend $75 every 2 weeks for coffee or for soap or shampoo, you know, whatever they allow you to have. Under Michigan law, these stores who are run by the state of Michigan, they're allowed to charge not more than 10% of the average price of a store that's located within a certain radius of the prison, of each prison. So the money that's made from those stores, that money is used to buy the recreation equipment that the inmates use. The taxpayers don't pay a penny for that. I want to make that very clear to everyone. I'll tell you what the taxpayers do pay for. They pay for a lot of extra guards that sit around on their ass for 10, 12 hours a day and don't do anything. And that's a fact. So much money is being wasted to pay for people to come in and sit on their ass and do nothing.
I'm not surprised by that, because if you look at a lot of other government offices.
Sure. And another thing I want to point out, when I was behind the walls at Jackson, okay, we had 2,000 people in my certain unit, okay? There were 350 inmates to each block. For every 350 people, there were two counselors that you could talk to. That was it. When I got shipped to Ryan Correctional Facility in Detroit, the total population there, the whole prison, was 1,100. The buildings could hold 96 inmates in each unit. For those 96 inmates, there were two counselors plus a resident unit manager. So there's a third person in there. You got three people for 96 people as opposed to two people for 350 inmates at Jackson. That's why I say it's big business, so much wasted money. And I can remember, I could look out my window in the parking lot at Ryan to see some of these counselors that come in. And sometimes, I'd be lucky if I'd see them 2-3 days a week. They'd be driving Jaguars, Cadillacs. And I'm thinking, something is wrong with this picture. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where the taxpayers are getting soaked.
So when you're in prison, when you said that you could witness murders and all these other things, when does that happen?
That can happen at any time at all. When I was at Jackson, I was working as a clerk in the kitchen. My friend Jimmy Jones and I. It was a good job. Probably the best job in prison, but with my background being in business, and you know, that's why I got the job. But I can remember, it was called the Big Top, the Big Chow Hall. You used to see 350 people. I'd see people standing in line. There'd be 50, 60 guys standing in line waiting to get their tray. And once you got your tray, the cops were there. You have to sit at the next open seat. I can't tell you how many times I've seen 3-4 guys jump out of the line, run up the line, stab a guy 10, 12 times, and he'd be laying there. They'd actually die on the floor.
And where's the police? Where's the guards?
Some of them, they're getting ready. And at Jackson, and you're going to love this story, about the smiley face, okay, this is a true story. There was a big smiley face on the wall, on the far wall of the Chow Hall, Jackson, about 10 feet in diameter, 8, 10 feet in diameter. When I first saw that, I'm thinking to myself, I was talking to Jimmy, and I said, you know, what the hell is that happy face doing up there? He said, you'll find out. You're going to find out soon enough, okay? So one day, there's a wall separating the work area and the eating area. So Jimmy and I come, walk behind to get our food by the diet line because they had better food. Well, I'll never forget this day as long as I live. I'm standing there holding my tray. Fight breaks out. And right above where Jimmy and I are standing, there's a guard booth, maybe 40, 50 feet wide. And they have armed guards up there. So it's one day, I'm standing there holding my tray next to Jimmy. A fight breaks out in the middle of Chow Hall. And everybody starts screaming. I'm standing there, even though, you know, there's a wall between me and what's going on. I'm shaking like a leaf. And then I hear, boom! It was a shotgun. What happens at Jackson, there's a standard procedure. What happens at Jackson? Guard that would be above me, he have a shotgun. They'd shoot, they'd blow that happy face would just blow into a million pieces. Then another one, brand new face, all automated, would come in, brand new, smiley face. Whenever it happened, the fight broke out, the first shot was a warning shot. After that new face came up, next shot, the cops were going to kill somebody. I've seen it happen. That's why.
You've seen the guards kill somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have. I've seen guys get raped in a shower, mm-hmm. Forcibly raped. It's not a nice thing.
Yeah. I read in the book, too, that there are gangs in prison, and we hear about that sometimes. But again, in both instances, what you're talking about now and the gangs, I'm still like, where are the guards? Why aren't they separating the gangs? Why aren't they keeping people safe?
You know, there are some guards that do that. A minority of the guards do that. Most of them are scared to death themselves. I mean, look at it this way. If you're a guard, you're by yourself, an area by yourself, 40, 50 inmates start a fight. You going to jump in there?
No.
Well, that's why yeah. That's why it is the way it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's a dark world. It's a world that I hope no one has to see. But it's there. It exists. It's real.
Something needs to change, though, because there shouldn't be 50 people all together that can start a fight in the first place.
I agree. That's a whole other issue. I could spend a week telling you about what needs to be done inside
the
walls.
Yeah.
My main concern is getting the message out, getting the innocent men and women out of prison. That's mm-hmm. my goal. And
first.
Getting the reforms made, the laws that need to be passed to ensure that justice is equal and for all. That's what I want.
Let's go back to how did the conviction affect your family?
Well, as I said, I told you my dad passed away on Memorial Day of 2000. I was not allowed to go to the funeral because of the length of my sentence and the nature of my crime. That's one thing that always bothered me. Boy, when my mom and dad would come to see me, this may sound cruel, and it's not meant to be cruel, but I almost wish that they wouldn't, because it was so hard for me. I mean, I could see how, just the look on their face, I could see how they were aging, how this was bothering them. It was so hard, Connie, to see them leave by themselves. It's not a very nice experience.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. How did it affect friendships that you had?
Well, I'll tell you, all my friends believed me. They knew me. I could never do that. I couldn't rape. I had no reason to go rape a woman. I had no reason to break into someone's house to rob somebody. But I'll tell you another thing how it affected me. It affected my son. I said, the truth will come out. It'll take, I don't know how long it's going to take, but the truth will come out. He said, what am I supposed to do in the meantime? And I said, go talk to Grandpa Vic. Maybe think about joining the Navy. I said, that you get the discipline that you need. I said, I don't know how long it'll be before I come out, to help you. But please take my advice. Talk to Grandpa, and maybe he's joining the Navy. And that's what he did. But you see, I paid a terrible price for what happened to me. There's no doubt. I believe more damage was done to my mom and dad and to my son. And the damage that was done to my son, that's going to last forever.
How's your son doing now?
He was having a lot of difficulty still, but for the last year or so, year and a half or so, I'm proud to say, Kenny, if you're listening, I'm proud that you finally got your life back on the right track. He's got two kids. Both my grandchildren were born. I was still in prison when my mm-hmm. grandchildren were born. When people go to prison, you lose everything. It hurts when a guilty person goes to prison. And there's no reason why an innocent person should go to prison or have to go through the ordeal that I went through or my fellow exonerees anywhere around the country. That's got to stop.
Right.
And it will stop.
Yep. We've got to get so many people working to get
We do. And I remember hearing a statement somewhere, individually we're only one drop, but together we're an ocean. And there are so many people that have, good people, that have joined the fight since I've been home. I'm just honored and proud to be a part of that group.
We'll become a tidal wave.
A big tsunami. It's getting bigger every week. I stay pretty busy, but I'll tell you what, Connie, never in my life would I have thought that I would have gone through an experience like this, but I did. Never would I have thought that I would sit in prison for 10 years or be doing what I'm doing now, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. This is what my life is supposed to be. And I'll do the best I can, Lord. Promise.
Is there anything else that you want people to know, Kenny?
Yeah, I really want people to understand that there are a lot more people like me who remain in prison to this day. Innocent men and women remain in prison to this day. We need help. Our numbers have grown in terms of people who come forward to help us, but we still need more. We need more. We need to reform our criminal justice system. We need to make America honest again, as it should be. Boy, I think nowadays that statement has never been more true than it is today. But we're getting there. The numbers are, number of exonerations are going up and up, but not as fast as I would like them to see them go up. But we'll keep pushing. And as Tom Petty used in Heartbreakers used to say, I won't back down.
I have been through the Muskegon Correctional Facility. Mm-hmm. Just to me, it seemed like there were quite a few people that seemed to have developmental disabilities. Like you mentioned, people couldn't read or write. Maybe they had autism or something. And I'm wondering how much of the population is there just because they don't have the intellect to deal with the system.
There are too many people like that in prison. I'll tell you the reason why. It's because when John Engler was the governor, he shut down all the mental health care facilities in the state of Michigan. That is shameful. That is shameful what Governor Engler did. That's why. Because now, if someone does have a mental disability, there's no place to send them other than to prison. Okay?
Or the streets.
Or the streets, yeah. And the sad fact is, then people, if you would reopen the mental health centers, it's actually cheaper, tax-wise, to send a person to a facility, mental health facility, that is capable of helping the person, as opposed to sending them in prison. As of today, I think it's like $36,000 a year for each inmate. And it's, it's around $20,000-$21,000 for someone with a mental disability. Hopefully, maybe with our new administration coming in, and I know they're very well aware of the problems that exist right now in our criminal justice system, because I've appeared with a lot of the people that are coming into office now. So I'm more optimistic now than I was 15 years ago that, we're going to get this right. I love animals. I love dogs. The state of Michigan treats animals better than they do human beings, people with true mental problems, and that's shameful. I'm going to do my best to change it, Connie, and I will. We'll get there, believe me.
How many innocent people do you think there are in Michigan prisons? When you were in prison, did you meet other people who were innocent?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked me that question, Connie, and I'll tell you exactly how I feel about that. As I said, I was in a law library every day, every day I was in prison, and I would meet guys that were, I felt in the same boat that I was. And some guys that were guilty, but they were illiterate, they couldn't read or write, and I would actually help them understand the law, and I would file briefs for them at times. And I can remember the second time I did Mitch Albin's program, right after I got out. And Mitch knew about my background. He knew that I studied the law on my own and that I was helping other people. And he asked me, he said, Kenny, just based on my own experience, that from the people that I met when I was in prison, he asked me what I thought the percentage was of people that were actually innocent in prison in Michigan. And, I thought about that for a couple of minutes, Connie, and I told him, I said, Mitch, I think it's between 10 and 12%. And Mitch looked at me, he said, you got to be kidding me. I said, you asked me the question, I'm telling you. As a matter of fact, I think it might be a little bit higher than that, and which Mitch had a hard time believing. And just about a few years ago, there was a report that was released by our Justice Department out of Washington, D.C., the United States Justice Department, mm-hmm. by their own estimate. County, they estimate that there are 15 to 18% of our prison population in the United States is actually innocent.
Wow, so even more than you thought.
So let me give you this fact, okay?
You've scared me enough already.
Well, I want people to be scared because this stuff happens every day and it has to be stopped.
And it can happen to anyone.
It can and it has. It's happened to police officers and a large number, believe it or not, of our military veterans. People who have served their country honorably, they come back home, they can't get a job for some reason, they get falsely arrested, convicted, and put in prison. But getting back to the numbers of people in prison, okay, this is a fact, Connie. There are 2.6 million people behind bars in the United States. The United States has more people in prison than Russia and China combined.
What?
That's a fact. That is a fact. So, now look at it this way. I told you what the Justice Department said, you know, 15-18% that they believe are innocent.
Right.
I told Mitch 10-12%. Let's take a flat 10%. 10% of 2.6 million people. That's 260,000 innocent people in prison. And I still think that might be a little short. But again, that is a stunning fact. If that doesn't get your attention and give you a better idea of how often these wrongful convictions happen, God help you.
Well, why do you think it's happening? Do you think the police just want to go around and brag about all the convictions they've got, and so they're just trying to solve cases any way they can?
It happens for a couple of reasons, Connie, I believe. First of all, you know, it's their ego. A lot of prosecutors or dishonest detectives, their ego is so big they want the conviction because they think if they get a conviction, you know, they can go to a higher office. And I
get their picture in the paper.
Yeah,
they get reelected.
You know, you hear about a lot of prosecutors around the country. Well, I got especially if they're running for office. Well, I got a 97% conviction rate. But what they don't tell you is about 50% of that 95% are confessions. A lot of those confessions are false or coerced. So that's one of the reasons why. The other reason why, Connie, and this is a sad fact in our society, prisons are a big, big business. Huge business. And, you know, I'll tell you this, an interesting fact, too. Back in late 1980s, in the state of Michigan, one out of every 33 people who worked for the state of Michigan worked for the Department of Corrections. One out of 33. You know what that number is today?
No.
What? One out of every three people work for the Department of Corrections.
That's crazy.
That's a fact. That's why I say it's a big business. That's not fake news. That is a fact. So people, please understand that. Get a better idea of it and try to join us to reform our criminal justice system.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We would like to give you a 20% discount for ordering the book Deliberate Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Ken Wynemco at www.deliberateinjusticethebook.com. Use code POD20. Order today to learn more about wrongful convictions and how this can happen to anyone. Again, your discount code is POD20.